are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Everyone, this is Beth, health and wellness expert. We're back for a brand new show along with host Dr. Scott Clitheroe, and we are over in the moon that you've all decided to join us today. So today we're going to talk about that never-ending topic of weight loss. You know, I don't know how you feel about this, Scott, but you know, well, obesity and being overweight can take a toll on your self-esteem and confidence. It isn't just about the way you look. In fact, I tell people that should be the least of your worries. I mean, we all want to look good, but obesity contributes to premature aging and even death by increasing the risk for developing life-threatening diseases. So I really want to explore the most common reasons why people struggle to lose weight alongside the weight loss tips, and hopefully we can help people remove some of that struggle.
I agree. And I also think that in my experience, there's not a one size fits all, no pun intended. There's just not one diet or lifestyle plan that fits everybody. Everybody's different. And just because your best friend lost weight with some plan doesn't mean you will necessarily do so with the same plan, and you may not enjoy it. So I think there's something out there for everybody that is doable. You know, it's effective and will add to your quality of life.
You know, that's funny you say that, because you're absolutely right. I mean, just because your neighbor Joe lost 20 pounds on the keto diet, that doesn't mean that one, you can stick with it, and two, that it's necessarily healthy. But I actually just got results. I'm so excited about this. I just got results on foods that my body doesn't do well with. I did some genetic testing with food, and get this. So eggs, cranberry, snapper, bananas. I'm actually reading the list now. Agave nectar, aluminum, and sugar. So those are like, I know, things I really need to stay away from. Not that I eat aluminum, but I try really hard not to drink out of aluminum cans or cook out of aluminum, but my body doesn't do well with that. So not that, and it's kind of expensive. You go out there and get genetic testing to see what your body responds. I mean, who knew? Eggs is a superfood, but my body does not. And that's the number one thing that my body has a strong reaction to.
Wow. How did you find that information out?
I got a blood test. I actually went to Dr. Osborne in Houston, Texas. He's a natural homeopathic doctor, and got a blood test. So I just got the results in this past week.
Interesting. And then how do you find out, like, what is your resource to go to for how to find out if a food contains aluminum, or, you know, in other words, how does somebody go to a respected resource to find out this information?
I mean, I'll put this in the show notes, but I really think you need to do your research. I think you need to find someone who's been doing this for years to talk about the heavy metals and how our bodies react to them. So I don't think food itself actually, you know, contains any aluminum, but cooking out of aluminum or drinking out of aluminum and things like that. But brown rice, which is seemingly healthy, actually has some arsenic in it. So again, doing your research and your homework and all that good stuff is just the most important thing to do.
Wow. That's interesting. Well, I totally agree with you, Beth. And I love the way you work with patients, because it's in a situation, you create a situation that's understanding and supportive, because I think some people get so frustrated with the difficulty with the losing weight, and there's so much information out there, and it's bewildering. It's frankly bewildering even to healthcare professionals, you know, what works best, what doesn't, and we all struggle with it. So I think that I like the way you created a positive energy for this, that it's, you know, it's a lifestyle plan. It's not a quick fix. I mean, yeah, you may want to lose weight for a certain function coming up, but you want to maintain that. You want to continue that, but you want to do it in a way where you're not feeling deprived and that you're still feeling wholehearted and fulfilled, because that's what it's all about, you know. And I tell people a lot of times, look, just, you know, make that first step. You know, the first, sometimes jokingly, I'll say the first plan of any weight loss program is just not to gain weight. How about if in a month you're the same weight you are today? That's worthy of a high five all around, because you have stopped that train down the track and you're actually doing something to kind of stop that, you know, weight gain. And then you can kind of catch your breath and go, okay, what can I add to it? How can I do it? So, mm-hmm. you know, make it just positive. I think that's one thing I stress is make it something that you can, you know, not stress about, and don't kill yourself, you know, figuratively, if you have a bad day and you eat some bad foods, it's okay. It's not the end of the world. Just, you know, do better tomorrow and do a little more exercise. You know, I just like the way you create that energy of positivity.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. It can be confusing. I mean, even for us, I mean, take a walk through the supermarket and you'll be assaulted. I mean, assaulted with aisle after aisle of quote unquote healthy food. I mean, healthy potato chips, healthy cookies, healthy juices, healthy sodas. And Scott, I mean, you most likely already know that if you want to lose weight, cutting out processed foods and sweets is the first and most obvious step. But when you do see that glaring sticker that says healthy, it can be really confusing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. Well, you know, what I'm really interested in to learning from you, frankly, because this is an area that I don't have a tremendous amount of information, but it's just, you know, what's the most important thing? Because, you know, the doctor me knows deep down that part of the whole part of weight loss is just caloric intake and you know, expenditure. It's kind of bookkeeping, you know, the whole caloric balance. And, you know, I know there's, you know, tables out there. In fact, the government has one I'm pretty sure I saw recently, you know, where it just tells you by your age and whether you're sedentary or active, how much you should need calorically daily to maintain your weight. You know, there's that table. So in other words, let's say you look up your table and your estimated caloric intake to maintain is 2,000 calories a day. Well, then where do you go from there? Because, you know, you could eat 2,000 calories worth of Twinkies every day, right? And or you know, you could fast. And we all know that fasting may have a role in some of this, but it's not healthy overall, you know, to eat unhealthy or to fast. So, you know, where do people go? Another way to ask it, do you feel like one of the first things a person should do when they start to think about weight loss is it important to kind of get a handle on their caloric intake, where they are on average and where they need to be? Is that important?
Well, okay. That's kind of a question that I'm going to straddle a little bit, because obviously calories are energy, and the energy, if you have too much, you're going to gain weight. If you cut back on the calories, but let's take that a step further. I'm not a huge calorie counter, and I don't encourage people to count calories. I really encourage people to get the nutrients they need and to really cut out the sugars. I mean, I tell people I don't want them to have any more than 25 grams of added sugar a day. And just look at this. I mean, even good foods like yogurt and salad dressing and tomato sauce are often packed with sugar, leading to more cravings and inflammation, headaches, and so much more. And that's the number one reason people are struggling to lose weight, is that all that added sugar, all that crap that people are eating. So the first thing I tell people is to look through your refrigerator and pantry and take stock of what's in there. If most of your foods are boxed or in bags, it's time to transition to a more whole food type of diet, type of lifestyle. I mean, look at the food labels too. How much sugar is in your favorite jar of pasta sauce? Are those crackers loaded with preservatives? And so really, first eliminate or seriously cut back on the packaged and processed and sugar foods. And eat real foods instead. And I mean, I do have to say that of all the weight loss tips that Dr. Clifton and I can give, this one is absolutely essential. I mean, this means eating an apple instead of apple juice, eating orange slices instead of something orange flavored. If you're craving something, skip the no-fat version, and which actually is going to likely leave you wanting more. So really, sugar is the biggest thing that I tell people to cut out, and really for 2 to 3 weeks, cut it down to 25 grams of added sugar a day. Not too concerned about the sugar in an apple, the sugar in a banana, unless you are a diabetic, unless you're on a renal diet. Some of those are special cases, but if someone wants to lose weight, sugar is the number one thing that I tell people to cut out.
Interesting. And then what about, that kind of leads me to ask you, of course, about the famous Atkins diet and, you know, and just all the keto diets that are out there. You know, I'll just go ahead and say my opinion about them is they're effective. They're effective mm-hmm. for weight loss. They seem to really work. They, you know, when you're in a ketotic type phase, you know, you're definitely getting rid of some fluid. You're, you know, having almost a diuresis type effect. And that seems to help with a lot of water weight, which, you know, water retention is a problem. And then, you know, there's some issues, of course, with kidney function and all that. So what are your thoughts about the keto diet?
Well, I think the Atkins, the low carb, or the keto diets are kind of all in the same family. But to let our, you know, audience know, if you, this keto diet, I mean, you see commercials for the keto diet, Slim Fast bars or whatever, but this is basically when you're an extremely low carb or no carb diet, you're drastically reducing or completely eliminating the amount of glucose you eat. And as you know, once glucose has been eliminated from the body and there are no more carbs or sugar available for your body to use for energy, the body will turn to stored fat instead, helping you lose fat. There are pros. Like you said, people are likely to experience rapid weight loss, particularly in the first few weeks and months. When you eat foods with sugar and carbohydrates, our bodies release insulin, and then the fat storage hormone, which is a fat storage hormone, but it sends signals to your cells to store as much energy in the form of glycogen or fat. So drastically reducing our intake of carbs, our bodies release less insulin. So the less insulin in our bloodstreams means glycogen is used by our bodies as energy and not stored. And when that supply is over, it turns to fat for energy next. So you are going to reduce your risk for diabetes. You can really, again, lose weight and be healthy. The only kind of pros, that's what I see with the pros, but the cons, I think when people reduce or totally eliminate carbs, people really have a lack of energy or feelings of fatigue, which really isn't exactly the motivation you need for hitting the gym or working out, which I am really big on people exercising. There's actually something called the keto flu. And I don't know if you've heard of that before, but when people are in the, you know, keto diet, they just don't feel good. They can just kind of get cranky, kind of, again, just not feel good, feel very lethargic. And carbs can be found in expected places like fruits and legumes and quinoa. So totally kicking them out of your diet means you might be missing out on essential fiber, vitamins, and minerals. So, you know, I'm kind of on the fence about that. I think it's good. So when I actually work with someone, I encourage them, if they really want to try the keto diet, I encourage them to do it for like 5 days. And then the weekends, get some of those really healthy vegetables and fruits and brown rice and all that. And there are some long-term studies that are just coming out now that are saying people who are strict keto followers may be at risk for heart disease later on, not because of the extra weight, but because just of the lack of the fiber and those minerals and vitamins they need. So really do your homework, talk to professionals about what you want to do.
I agree. And I agree. And you really just so succinctly put that, Beth, that it may be good short term, but long term, it's not sustainable. It doesn't seem like it's something that's really healthy, because I think there's so many benefits we get from fruits and vegetables, you know, eating whole foods and foods that are natural, because there's less processed food that creates less inflammation. And we know that a lot of the atherosclerosis that, you know, that comes for, you know, with living in age may come from inflammation. We know there's a lot of, you know, obviously there's a lot of interest in that. And I think processed food and food that may be, you know, low vegetable and fruit containing diets may be higher in inflammation diets, and that's not good for us either, you know. That kind of, you know, the other diet that's kind of near and dear to my heart that I've, you know, I've known about for quite a while is the DASH diet or lifestyle, you know, DASH, this dietary approach to stop hypertension, or DASH, D-A-S-H. And it was a long, big multi-center study. It's been a while now, but it really showed that a diet that was rich in fruits and vegetables and low-fat dairy foods would lower blood pressure. And, you know, less meat. It's not vegetarian. It's just less meat and, you know, eat more whole grain foods, fish, poultry. So it's kind of it really seems to me, as not an expert nutritionist like you are, that it just seems like a diet that we kind of learned about from a long time ago, that it's not so much focused on calories. It's just, you know, moderation and lots of fruits and vegetables, lot less saturated fat, cholesterol and trans fats and less sugar, you know? So it's kind of, it seems to me a little bit more of a sensible diet. And then it's got that research backed up with it, which shows that within 2 to 4 weeks of going on a lifestyle like this diet, if you will, that your blood pressure comes down. So it's really for people out there who are hypertensive, who may be on medications or trying to avoid medications, it may be worthwhile to Google DASH, D-A-S-H, dietary approaches to stop hypertension, and just see if that's something they could handle. It's not that hard. So I don't know what you know about the DASH diet.
Yeah, I think it's actually pretty similar to the Mediterranean diet.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And actually, this is actually my favorite. I actually am working with someone, unless they are diabetic, unless they have, you know, a specific issue. But for the masses, for the general population, I really like the Mediterranean diet, because this diet really focuses on foods found in nature. You're less likely to eat processed or sugary foods. You're going to snack on almonds and walnuts instead of cookies. There's abundance of foods rich in healthy fats that can help you reduce your risk for heart disease as well. And honestly, from the people that I have coached for 20 years, it's probably the most sustainable long term. It really allows you to enjoy food with an occasional indulgence. But again, I do have to say that it is easy to go overboard. While healthy fats are good for us, portion control still needs to be exercised, which can be difficult for some people. So, if you're looking to lose weight fast, this diet is probably not for you. Like if you have this like thing that you want to go to in 3 to 4 weeks, this family reunion or wedding or whatever, and you're healthy, I would probably actually encourage the keto diet. But for long term, I think the Mediterranean diet, the DASH diets are really, really good. They are. Mm-hmm. They're healthy. And we all know that we're not getting enough of those omega-3s in our diet.
I think that's so true. I think you just kind of touched on something that kind of circles back to what I brought up earlier, though. I think that, again, whichever diet you pick, whatever type of foods you're avoiding or picking, you have to be mindful of portions. You know, I think that is important. And, you know, one thing you taught me years ago, Beth, when I first met you, which I thought was fascinating, I was listening to you talk to some patients, was about I don't know if you called it this, but I call it this mindless eating, that a lot of times we take in calories when we're eating and not even thinking about it, like eating when you're driving or eating when you're watching TV or looking at your phone and social media. And I remember you talking to a patient group saying, look, when you're eating, eat and don't do anything else except focus on the food, how it tastes, take your time, eat slower and enjoy the food. And I think you've said that will slow you down and you may consume less calories per sitting. Is that something that kind of still resonates with you?
Oh, absolutely. And we live in a fast-paced society where it's so easy. I have trouble with that. If I'm going to a meeting or I'm going to a function and this is my time to eat, sometimes eating in your car or working at your computer while you're having a meal. So actually eating when you are at a table, you're enjoying the meal, you're thinking about what you're eating and you're not watching TV, you're not reading, you're focused on your food and your meal, is actually a really healthy thing. And you're not going to overeat. Studies show this. So studies show if you plan your meal, you sit down and enjoy your meal, make it an event, you're going to be healthier.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I tell you, I think that's fascinating. Again, this is so interesting to me because, I mean, we all, some of us are lucky enough not to worry about this, but, most of us do. And since our last visit with our audience, I've actually, because I've had so many patients tell me about it, especially my diabetic patients or my patients who are trying to avoid diabetes, I've had patients into the whole intermittent fasting or alternate day fasting program. And so, I know you've got a story to tell about this too, but I'll tell mine first. I've fasted twice now, once for 36 hours, basically from, I ate an early dinner on Monday night and then I didn't eat again until Wednesday mid-morning or so. So roughly 36 hours and then another time about 18 hours. And I got a lot to talk about, but I think I'll just say this to the audience because I think this is what to me is important is what I realized is that I really sat there and listened and felt and kind of really held my hunger up to look at it and what does it feel like a couple times during the day. And to me, it was a very empty feeling, literally an empty feeling, a tugging, a nagging, a kind of a boring feeling in my stomach. But what I realized, which I know a lot of people know, but I think it took me doing this to realize it, is that it goes away. It gets better, especially with water. And I literally just went nuts. I had no food at all. And I'm not saying that's for everybody and always check with your physician or your healthcare provider. But I felt like it was important to me to realize that if when you're really hungry and if you're like me at risk of going and scarfing down something that may not be as healthy as you should eat, if you just drink some water and keep moving and keep working, you're not going to quote unquote die. You know, that feeling like, oh my God, the feeling of dread is like hunger is one of the worst feelings. And I think it was really important for me personally to just remind myself, it's okay. You're going to be okay. Drink some water, keep busy, distract yourself. And within 30 minutes, like, oh my God, that really horrible feeling's gone or it's a lot less. And you kind of push it back into the background of your mentation and move on with your day. And again, not for everybody, but I think I'm almost rather do that, Beth, than the kind of the low calorie diet. Like there's this, there's alternate day fasting versus maybe people that do just very low calorie 400, 600, 800 calories a day. I think I'd most rather just do the fasting for 24 hours, 36 hours. But anyway, so and there's been some studies that show that that does help with blood sugar control, weight loss, but of course it needs to be part of a whole program. But so anyway, that's my story about fasting. I know you have something to tell the audience about fasting.
Well, I do. But before that, so intermittent fasting is, okay, so fasting, it's biblical. People fast in the Bible. It's been around for years and years and years and years. So right now, something that's popular is intermittent fasting, which basically you're just skipping a meal a day. So you're having either lunch and dinner, or maybe you're having breakfast and lunch, but you're not eating for like 16 hours a day. So that's intermittent fasting. And I think it's really healthy. Again, I think that as long as you're getting the nutrients that you need in your 8 hour of eating, then you are good to go. You just have to make sure you don't get to the hunger. And we just said planning your meals, planning what you're going to snack on the day. You have to be a planner or you can tend to overeat because you will get hungry. So intermittent fasting is really good. And I use that a lot with my clients. There's also fasting when you are basically like a water fast, when you are only going to have water for a day, 2 days, 3 days, 6 days, 30 days, whatever you choose to do. Now, I know on our last guest that we talked to, Gary Golding, he basically fasted for 3 weeks, when he was on the show Naked and Afraid, and he said he felt healthier. Of course, you're going to feel hungry. You also have a dry fast when you have nothing, absolutely nothing. And this is kind of more of, I know a lot of churches do this. I know Mormons and Seventh-day Adventists, they encourage their members to fast, do a dry fast for 24 hours for the peaceful benefits that you get to really think about what's going on in your body as well as the health benefits. Yeah. I've known some Mormons in my life and they are the healthiest people I've ever met. So that's called a dry fast. And then there's other things like the Daniel fast and things like that. But I did actually experience a water fast myself, my friend, a 6-day water fast. And It was difficult, but I will tell you this, it wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be. Day two and day three, I felt kind of that, those hunger pains. I remember as I was on the phone with you and I'm like, I want to eat my shoe right now. And and I was, I mean, absolutely, I was hungry. But surprisingly, day four, five, and six, I was fine. I was fine.
And you drank nothing but water that whole time.
I drank nothing but water. And God. I put some peppermint oil in my water to give it some taste and some flavor, and that helps with digestion. So I thought it would kind of help my digestion, my gut system. But it wasn't that bad, Scott. It really wasn't. Day, like I said, you know, day two and three were the hardest. I was like, I can't do this. I kind of felt almost hungover. I had that kind of feeling where I felt, and I would say lightheaded, but I just felt kind of dragging, you know, but I was in a focused environment. I wasn't driving. I was, you know, I was in one location and it was very scheduled on my part. Like I did this on a time that I knew I wasn't going to be driving. I knew, but I'm swear on day four, I really was just like, oh my gosh, surprisingly, I'm not hungry.
Wow.
I
That's
am.
Great. I mean, did you, how did, so at the end of the fast, do you have any data for us? How did you, numbers, or were they tracking numbers in this program or was it,
No, it was, and I wish I would have, and I'm going to do this again. I actually told you when you were prepping for the show that I think I'm going to do this again in June. So I definitely will look at those numbers. And I actually did, I've always wanted to do a long-term fast. I tried to do one, I think it was in November of 2018. And I like, okay, day two, I'm like, forget it. And I think I actually had a protein bar, which wasn't the healthiest thing for me to break my fast with, but I did it just to see if I could do it. In fact, a friend of mine did a 33-day fast.
Wow.
And
that's a long time.
That's a long time, and that's not for everyone. Check with your healthcare provider. I do think fasting, I think most of us are overnourished anyway. I think we eat too much. I think we eat too much. So I definitely think that if fasting is something you want to entertain, find somebody who, there are certified fasting coaches out there. So that can help you do this. Healthy way.
Well, Beth, you also talked about this one thing that, you know, studies have shown is that when you, you know, and we, I think there was some stuff in the news about the biggest loser contestants that a lot of them gained weight back. And you know, there's been a lot of studies that show that, you know, that when you lose weight, you get a, you know, you don't have any control over this, but your body just reduces energy expenditure at rest. You know, your baseline metabolic rate just goes down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is something that has been, you know, eons of evolution in our bodies that promote that. We can't do anything about that in the short term, but we can, you know, be aware of it and know that exercise is important to maintain weight loss. So, you know, exercise is always important. We talk about that on the show all the time. It's important for your behavioral health and for your weight and all that, but it's also important to maintain weight loss because you have all these hormones that are out there, the ghrelins and the GIPs that downregulate, and then, you know, before you know it, you're being conspired against your body to, you start gaining weight even though you haven't really changed anything else you're doing. So I think that's an important part of the process too, is to know that, hey, great job on losing weight, but it takes a little bit of work to keep it down, keep it off.
Oh, absolutely. And I would like to talk about fitness and kind of switch the conversation to exercise for a second, but I do want to kind of wrap up the whole fasting thing that when I did my 6-day fast at the seventh day, it was time for me to eat. My body was saying, I wasn't starting, but it was time because I felt a little weak. I felt like I was losing some strength. So I actually ate, but I ate light. It was salads. It was a lot of veggies and protein for the next 2 to 3 days. And then I lost a little bit of weight, but it wasn't a weight loss thing. It was more of a detoxing thing for me.
Right.
So, but you are absolutely right. I love exercise. This is what I studied in college. And you know, Scott, a big reason some people aren't losing weight is they're doing the wrong type of exercise.
What do you mean? In other words, aerobic exercise is what you think of, you know, for weight loss and maintaining weight loss.
Okay. So if you're spending hours at the gym or hours doing cardio, you might see results kind of like the keto diet. You're going to see results quickly, But, and again, most people focus their exercise efforts on cardio done at a moderate type of intensity like jogging. While that type of exercise is really good for your heart, if you're trying to lose weight, it's time to kick it up a notch. Okay. And what I mean by that is if you're jogging and you're doing what I would call moderate intensity, like walking or jogging, again, that's really, really good for your heart. It's great. I would never tell someone not to go out there and walk or jog. Never. Mm-hmm. But never, yeah. If you want to lose weight, that means you need to dedicate not more time exercising per in fact, you may even exercise a little bit less, but things like high intensity training, which is called HIIT workouts, can slash the time commitment while boosting results. And most HIIT workouts last about 20 minutes. So
is this the gladiator type programs you see around at the all over the country, or what are high intensity? Are those there's a tape out there that's real popular too, right? Or not a tape anymore. It's a YouTube video program or something, right? There's all sorts of different programs for that.
Oh, right. Now. Tabata, HIIT training. Those are all interval training. These type of workouts have been found to help people lose more fat once the workout's over. So let's kind of take it back a little bit. So what I mean by HIIT or interval means you're going to do something at a moderate pace, like walking or jogging, for 2 to 3 to 4 minutes. And then you're going to ramp it up, go full out for anywhere from 10 seconds to a minute. And then you're going to take it back down to, and I know we talked about this in depth a couple of shows ago, but when you're basically alternating the moderate to the high intensity, just switching it back and forth, anywhere from 20 seconds to 2 minutes on the slower end, the moderate end, to really kicking it up from 10 seconds to a minute. And again, just doing that, even though you might burn less calories during the workout, since the workouts are shorter, you're building muscle rather than breaking it down the conventional cardio does. So I have to say, if anyone's listening, really try that. Yeah. And then also lifting weights. People shy away from weights at the gym. People are really diminishing your own weight loss and wellness efforts.
Because when you're losing weight, you're losing muscle mass too. So you want to combat that by doing some resistance training, correct? Is that that's the idea?
Well, that plus, if you look at your muscle just over a period, we have something called an afterburn when you work out. So the more muscle you have, the more calories you're going to burn throughout the day.
Okay, gotcha, mm-hmm. gotcha. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Well, again, I think that's true. And, while we're talking about it, I think it's important for folks out there to be careful with resistance training when they're starting off. If they can get a personal trainer, great. Not everybody can afford that. At least, make sure you're following some respectable video or instructional books so that you don't overdo it and get an injury. I see it time and time again. Somebody gets a really great motivation to go out and do things, and they come in with a separated shoulder or a pectoralis tear or something. So just make sure that whatever you do is moderate, start slow, build yourself up, have a friend or somebody to work out with. It's much safer that way, and also better motivation too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Because if you are so sore, you're walking like Frankenstein, you're not going to go back in 2 days. I mean, seriously, this is something a little bit about me. When I am so sore, there are times when, I just got over a cold. So there are times when I don't work out. So tomorrow I'm actually going to work out hard. I'm going to be sore on Wednesday and I can't wait. I love that feeling of building my muscles. I like being like that. I love it.
Yeah. Well, and I remember, you've heard it time and time again, but one of the best treatments for muscle soreness is stretching and more, or exercise, because you want that lactic acid, you want to get it out, you want to mm-hmm. get that circulation going and mm-hmm. build it out. I mean, that goes back to the old coaches in high school, but it's true that sore muscle is telling you something. And if it's real sore, obviously it may be an injury, but if it's just you're just sore
right.
from
yeah.
working out, you gotta don't stop, keep moving, it'll get better, it'll keep moving.
Now, I remember one time I had taught this really intense, I think it was like two back to back ballet workouts. at the YMCA. So I'm a runner, I'm a cyclist, I was doing a lot of that. So I did this ballet workout, two back to back. I was like, yeah, no big deal. I have a dance background. I was so sore the next day. Again, I loved it, but I didn't want to be sore because I had to work. So what I did is I drank a ton of water. I took an Epsom salt bath, but what I did is I took some magnesium gel and I rubbed the heck. I mean, I was biting on a towel and because I didn't want that lactic acid to stay. So I was literally giving myself a deep tissue massage with the magnesium gel on my thigh. Wow. Mm-hmm. And that took, and I mean, literally 10 minutes later, I wasn't sore.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah. Those are the kind of tips that are good to know because again, you're right. Somebody, you know, you get motivated to work out and you do it. And then how do you maintain it? How do you fight that soreness and go, okay, it's time to go back again. You know, it's just, it's hard. Again, for me personally, it's always having a running buddy, having an exercise buddy, having somebody there that can, you know, that you know is waiting for you to be there. It's always good to have some accountability, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm more likely going to meet you at the park if you say I'm going to be there at 8 o'clock as opposed to just, I guess I'll go on my own. Absolutely. I don't want to, you know, and there are tips. And if anybody has any questions about this, put this in the questions on the landing page and we would be more than happy to answer your specific question. But yeah, exercise is kind of the, again, we started off this show saying, yeah, we want to look good. But when you think about your health, being healthy and feeling good is so much more important than, you know, looking good. Let's get you to a certain level and then we can work about those size 4 jeans, you know? Absolutely.
So true. So true.
But I do want to say this, strength training, I mean, it does wonders to your body, but it also helps bones become more denser. And I mean, which is really critical because our bones become weaker as we age, increasing the risk of osteoporosis. 80% of the 10 million sufferers out there are women. So, but strength training as well as weight bearing activities, but strength training does help build lean muscle tissues and helps you lose weight all over. But it really can help with the bone density too.
Wow. That's interesting. Well, I think that, you know, when it comes to just this whole process of, you know, diet, exercise, lifestyle, I mean, again, I think we've really been trying to stress that, you know, everybody's different, yet that there are some, definitely some commonalities and some overreaching principles that are applied to everybody, but that, you know, you really have to find your own way and your own interest and really what makes you feel better. And that always comes back again to me to just be really try to be more in touch with our body, you know, really, you know, whether it's meditation or just quiet time. It's like, you know, okay, how do I feel right now? What are my problem areas? And then, you know, use that as information to then make a plan about what you're, you know, going to do for your lifestyle changes, whether it's diet or exercise. I think that's just so important for us to just kind of try to be a little bit more in tune with our body. And,
yeah.
You know, not only when we're feeling bad, but when we're feeling good, you know, what, mm-hmm. Hey, I'm really feeling good today. What did I do yesterday? You know, or how did I sleep last night? You know, just to really keep a mental ongoing diary or a real diary about your health, you know, how you're feeling, mm-hmm. Be, you know, kind of be in tune with your body.
And that's exactly, I actually was talking to a client this morning and we were talking about food and she's like, I think I had pasta last week or was it the week before? So, and I'm like, okay, let's take, actually have a food journal. That way you can tell me what you ate, what time you ate, how much water you had, how you felt, because that's a real thing. Even though you're eating sugar and it tastes so good and your serotonin levels go up because it tastes good, within like 10 minutes, that all crashes down and you might feel lousy afterwards. Yeah. I've had people say, and it's so amazing, if you're really in tune to see how you feel after you eat something, you may, I'm not saying you have an allergic reaction to it, but chemically it may be doing something to your brain, to your blood.
Yeah.
And if you do feel just kind of afterwards, it could be the food you're eating. It absolutely could.
I totally agree with that. Again, and that, you know, you said the word allergy. I've been hearing more and more about it. I don't consider myself an expert at all, but food allergies, boy, mm-hmm. I tell you, there's just a lot of stuff out there right now about food allergies. And that kind of circles back, I think, a little bit to inflammation that, you know, we know that high inflammation, you know, markers in our body are not conducive with good health and cardiovascular health and you know, CRP levels and on and on and different types of lipids. But I think that, again, food allergies is probably an area that may become more publicized and more research is going into it as we find out what people can tolerate.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said at the beginning of the show, I mean, I am allergic to eggs. I can't have cranberries or bananas. I'm looking at my list right now. Who would have macadamia nuts? Who would have ever thought eggs and bananas and cranberry would be bad, you know? But absolutely. Now, sugar's on here too, but, you know, absolutely. So I encourage, it can be a little pricey. I think there are some insurance companies that will pay for that. And I think it's the wave of the future. I really do.
Mm-hmm. I do too. Again, I don't know all the details about it, but I know that, you know, if you have an allergist in your community and you're interested in this, you could talk to them about it because they, you know, a lot of allergists do testing for not only obviously environmental allergens, you know, pollen and whatnot, but also for foods. And I think that's an area of interest, especially people who have digestive issues. There's no doubt that both, you know, classic IgE mediated reactions and non-IgE mediated, you know, reactions, you know, those are immunology type subjects, but you know, they're all either one can manifest as abdominal symptoms and pulmonary symptoms and skin symptoms. So I think that, again, what we put in our body is obviously very important in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Let food be your medicine and let medicine be your food.
So true. That's okay. So true. Yeah, so, I do too.
Well, so we're kind of wrapping up here. We've been, I know I could talk about this for hours and hours and hours, but I do want to say, okay, so our audience, I mean, you're a physician, you have studied the human body longer than I have in a different way, but when you have a patient come to you, do you, and I'm going to put you on the spot here because I really want to know, you as a physician, and you're probably a little bit more progressive than the average physician, I'm assuming, but do you give diet and fitness advice when you meet with your patient?
I do. And in the context of what I'm seeing them for, because as the audience may remember, I'm a hospitalist mostly. So I'm working in the hospital, taking care of very sick people in the hospital. I don't have a traditional office-based practice. So I do some other stuff too, but yeah, I do. I mean, a lot of what I do in the hospital, I'm seeing people who have obesity and diabetes and other issues. So I do, and I think one of the blessings of being a hospitalist, and that's why I've enjoyed it all these years, is the fact that I can spend a little bit extra time with patients. You know, I don't have to see a patient every 7 minutes. So yeah, I do. I talk to them about the very topics we've talked about. And one of the most important things to me about being a healthcare provider is connection and empathy. And I always, you know, definitely qualify my statements about this topic about that I have my own struggles. You know, I'm not overweight, luckily, but I, you know, certainly sometimes I'm a higher weight than I want to be and not happy with my food choices sometimes and what I'm doing. And so I try to, you know, connect on a level where I'm not judging because it's a struggle for everybody, but absolutely I do. And I wish physicians did more of it. You know, I think that's, but again, that's a lot of things in healthcare. Physicians don't always have time to talk about all the subjects they want to talk about. They can only talk about this one or that one, you know, that are most important. So, mm-hmm. But the answer is, yeah, I do. And I think, I do think there's a, you know, and I think also one of the benefits of being a hospitalist is I've been around nutritionists for most of my career. I've learned a ton from the registered dietitians and clinical nutritionists that work in the hospital. So I've been really lucky to work side by side with some really smart folks who taught me a lot. And then folks like you in the wellness industry have learned. So I think sometimes, you know, clinicians in the clinic, they're so focused on really just treating acute illness. They don't have a lot of time to do this. And that's not obviously as a generalization. I know a lot do, but it's tough. It's a lot to keep up with too, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're right. So, I mean, the lucky thing is, unless you have an allergy to a certain food and you need to stay away from it because it may cause inflammation or may cause other issues other than being overweight in your body. But once somebody gets to kind of a healthy weight, I think this is the beauty of, you know, food and our bodies, because our bodies will heal themselves. But once you got to get to the ideal weight and you're not obese, you're not overweight, I like to tell people there's a light at the end of the tunnel. So once you get to that point, a certain point where you're happy and you're healthy, I always like to tell people you can actually have one or two kind of moderate, not so healthy meals a week. And some nutritionists, some wellness call that the 80-20. So 80% of the time you're eating really healthy. And then 20% of the time, you know, and I'm not saying fall out and have like, you know, cereal and granola and pizza and nachos and whatever. You're not going to go crazy, but you can have that burger and fries. You can have that pizza, 20%, which would, you know, about two meals a week. So, and that's the beauty of our bodies. So, but you have to get healthy before you can do that.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I also wanted to say about the bewildering amount of information that's out there in the press and social media, and frankly, from healthcare providers and wellness people about studies and whatnot, is that a lot of this is my opinion, and I think I've read it places, but you know, the a lot of the studies in nutrition and diet are not great studies, because not that they don't mean well, but a lot of them are based on patients filling out a form and recalling what they ate for the past year, or self-reporting, we call it, you know, and whether people mean to or not, we're not always honest with ourselves or with others when we fill out these forms, and, or frankly, can't remember, you know? And so, you know, we always talk about the best studies in care are, you know, prospective, which means from time zero now forward, randomized double blind studies where, you know, the researcher and the subject doesn't know what they're doing. And then they're going to compare them going forward from point zero on. And then that's the standard kind of research. Well, it's kind of hard to do that in food, right? You can't take a group of people and lock them up and say, okay, we're going to feed you this and feed you that. But well, I know I'm eating the fatty meal and I know I'm eating the healthy meal. So there's just a lot of problems with that. So I think that people should take everything with a grain of salt when they hear studies and, you know, look for trends and kind of what sounds good to you, what's doable for you, and just understand that a lot of the research that comes out is it may not be ideal, but it's the best they can do, and they're doing great work, but it's, you know, it's tough. It's tough to make these studies happen, you know.
Mm-hmm. And some of them, but you're absolutely right. And I love when you said, let's lock up these patients and feed them a certain way. I love it.
Yeah.
I wish we could. I really wish we could.
Yeah.
I would have to do that. But two people that I really, actually three, but two just off the top of my head is Dr. Mercola and Ben Greenfield. They have some amazing studies on their website with this very thing. They walk the walk. They talk the talk. They are just wellness, you know, professionals to the T. I mean, oh my gosh, I really like their trains of thought and all the space. So if someone's really interested in looking at this, I would actually say those are two websites that I would, and I'll put those in the show notes as well, but those are two that I really recommend people looking at, Dr. Mercola and Ben Greenfield, amazing wellness professionals in the world, and have a lot of the things that you were very talking about right now. So yeah.
That's excellent tip. Excellent tip. That's good to know. Yeah, because it's good to have some resources to go to and just take your time and learn and read and you know, again, find a buddy. I think it'd be great, you know, finding groups. I think, you know, I'm not endorsing anything, but the Weight Watchers mentality, I think one of the things about the Weight Watchers, it seems to me as an outsider, I've never been involved in it, is just the camaraderie of we're all in this together and, you know, accountability and meeting and all that. I think that seems to help a lot of people, you know, that you're doing something together. You know, I think I'll say on the other hand, again, this is me not as a physician, but just, you know, it sure is nice when you're getting some healthcare advice from some dietary weight loss advice from someone who's not trying to sell you something, you know, not to be too cynical, but there's a lot of money being made in the diet industry and some of it's helpful, some of it's not, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, do your research, talk to healthcare professionals, see what works good with you. That's why I love the journaling. And I'm so glad you brought that up. Journaling, journaling, journaling. And again, you may not realize that you have an adverse reaction to sugar. It tastes yummy, but 20 minutes later, you might feel a little cranky. You might be craving something, but you won't know unless you journal. So, but we're going to get a quick commercial break and we will be right back with our closing segment.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
So that closes out the episode. If you enjoyed listening to A Healthier View, don't forget to subscribe to the show. We are syndicated, so that means we can be listened to from all mobile devices, and we can be heard from the following free apps. Just search for Up to Me Radio Channel on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and while in your car, you can listen to us on TuneIn. I would like to thank our sponsor, Atlanta Life Media Agency, for their support. Without them, this show would not be possible. Remember to visit our show and the other amazing shows on Up to Me Radio. And lastly, like Up to Me Radio on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, Up to Me Radio. I hope everyone had a great time, and we'll see you next time.